HanselMinutes.com. It's Hansel Minutes, a weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman. This is Lawrence Ryan, announcing show number 201, recorded live Friday, February 12th, 2010. Support for Hansel Minutes is provided by Telerik RAD Controls, the most comprehensive suite of components for Windows Forms and ASP.NET web applications. Online at www.telerik.com. In this episode, Scott talks with Chris Hardy about Monotouch and the creation of an iPhone app.
Hi, this is Scott Hanselman, and this is another episode of Hansel Minutes. This is episode 201, beginning the next 200. Lots and lots of stuff to come. And today we're sitting down with Chris Hardy, who is in fact calling in from the UK. How's it going, Chris?
Yes, good, thanks. How are you?
I'm well. Now, Chris, you're an ASP.NET developer. You work for a company in the UK called Great Fridays, and you work on ASP.NET MVC. You even have a weblog at weblogs.asp.net/Chris Hardy. But as I wander around on your weblogs.asp.net blog, I see Monotouch, view my Monotouch session, monotouchexamples.com, examples for Monotouch. Sounds like you have a night job.
Yeah, that's kind of how it is at the moment.
Now, we had Miguel and some of the folks from Mono over to talk a little bit about Monotouch, but maybe for folks that are not familiar with that show, just give us a brief kind of overview about what Monotouch is and why are you so passionate about it, even though you're an ASP.NET developer by day?
Yeah, well, I've got a Mac, so I'm still kind of, I want to do .NET development on a Mac, and I've been kind of playing around with MVC on the Mac, but it hasn't really got to a stage where I really want to use .NET on a Mac. And when Monotouch came along, which is, you know, the open source implementation of Mono, and I can use that with the iPhone, I thought, great, it's a chance to use my Mac to do .NET work, and who doesn't want to write an iPhone app? So I thought that'd be a good opportunity to start using my Mac as a .NET machine.
So what is involved? To walk me through the bill of lading of the things that I would need to go and write an application. And how much do I need to know about Mac stuff, and how much am I really leveraging? Because I think what's interesting about your story is that you're an ASP.NET developer by day, in the sense that that is your day job, right? You're not necessarily a Mac person. You're a professional paid .NET programmer.
Yep.
How much of your skills are really coming from the .NET framework and knowledge of the managed code in C#? And how much is this coming from some kind of subconscious Mac knowledge that you might have?
I would say with doing kind of iPhone development, a lot of it does come from knowing .NET. But then you've also kind of got Monotouch as a kind of SDK and the framework that you kind of have to learn, as well as kind of learning using your .NET skills. So if I was going from, say, using WebForms to MVC, it's still using C#. But you have to learn the framework.
What is required to do this? I need to download what on what machine? Walk me through what's necessary.
Yeah, so you need to have a Intel Mac to start off with. So if you've got a PowerPC Mac, unfortunately, it won't work, and that's a Apple restriction that they put on. So what you first need to do is you need to download the iPhone SDK from the Apple Store, from the Apple site even. And then you go on the Novell website, you download Mono, which I think is at 2.6 at the moment. You download Mono Develop, which is essentially Visual Studio. And then you download the Monotouch framework, get that installed, and then you're good to go, really.
And how much of this cost me, and how much of this is open source?
So the open source part's Mono and Mono Develop, so you can use that to create web forms sites, ASP.NET MVC sites. With Monotouch, you either have to pay for a license, or you can use the evaluation version, which limits you to some things in terms of you can't put it on the device. But you can at least develop most of your app kind of without having to pay anything up front.
Mm-hmm. What does this framework look like? I mean, is this file new iPhone app, or do I make a WinForms app and then add some references? I want to juxtapose it to the existing ways we do stuff.
What they've done with Mono Developers, they've created an iPhone add-in for it. So you go File, New, and then Create a New iPhone Project. And that kind of puts a lot of kind of the underlying code that you need to load up the app onto the device by default. So you don't have to kind of worry about setting that up from scratch.
Is there a base form, or I mean, I know that the iPhone has a number of UI metaphors that are very specific. They're the way that they do their lists, their sliding panels. Or do these do these feel like controls I pull over from a toolbox?
Yeah, so you probably won't want to use a toolbox. So there's a tool called Interface Builder, which if you're an Objective-C programmer, you would use with Xcode, which is similar to kind of it's an IDE. So you can either use the Interface Builder, and that way you can kind of click and drag controls onto that, like a designer surface. But then you can also just do it in code if you really want to. So what you use is you basically use the Monitouch framework, which is just basically bound the Objective-C libraries that you would use in normal iPhone development, so it works within C-sharp in Monitouch.
Okay, so if I'm understanding this correctly, I create my my window, my zip in the interface designer.
Yep.
That creates, the interface designer is not Monotouch specific, so that's creating Objective-C stuff in the background that I can choose not to look at. And then I hook that up somehow with managed code. How do I tell the managed code about the stuff that the interface designer generated?
So by default, what it will do is it will, when you create a new controller, view controller, it will automatically add in a few methods which allow you to, it will, for you, it will call the zip that links to your view controller name. So you don't have to worry about how it connects to that zip. What you do need to kind of worry about is how you get the information that's on the zip back into your code. And you do this by using outlets, which is kind of a way of creating instant variables for the class that you have.
And the word you just said was outlet, is that correct?
Outlets, yeah. So that's an Apple name for basically controls that are on your design surface.
And are these just shared variables?
So what it will do is it will create a designer.cs file, and that will create partial methods and your basically your instance variables for a class, and that will get generated when you save your zip, so you don't even have to write any of that code.
So if I were to drop a button on the page and hook up a button click, is it just hook up a button click event, or is it more than that? And I just, because what I'm used to doing in .NET is I drop a button, I double click, I get my button click event, and then I can refer to a textbox1.txt. What's the same thing look like in this world?
So what you can either do it two ways. If you're going to go down using a zip in the interface builder, you would then create an action as a button press action, and you would link that to a type of action that would happen on a button. And in Objective-C, this is known as touch up inside. So when you let go of a button, it will fire this action. What this does in your designer file is it will create a partial method, which you can then just use within your view controller, and that will get fired whenever the button's pressed off. So you want to, in your view controller, you want to create a partial method to kind of get that action when it's fired off. In on the contrast, what you can also do is you can just write your button in code. So you go var button equals UI button dot from type, and then this way it will create a default button that you can use. And then on that, you've got C-sharp style events. So you can just use button dot touch up inside, for example. And then you can create a delegate method, which will then fire off when you click on the button. So you can do it two kind of ways.
Are these events that are attached to UI elements part of Monotouch, or are they just projections of what's happening in Objective-C applied to Monotouch? I mean, like a button has a touch up and a touch down, but is that an Apple thing, or is that a Monotouch thing?
It's a monotouch thing in the way that it handles it. Normally what you would do is you would create a delegate for the whole class, and then that way the methods would get called to that delegate, so that it would take care of it as a delegate in Objective-C. But just for kind of ease of kind of understanding it from a .NET point of view, they're C# bound events, but you can also just create a new delegate and override methods that way.
Have you found that this is the easiest way for a .NET programmer to do an app like this, or have you ever found yourself digging into the Objective-C and saying, I want to just do this in I don't know, crazy cuckoo C language?
I started doing kind of Objective-C before kind of monotouch was around, and I only got so far. I managed to put a button on there, I managed so I can click on it, but then I kind of got stuck, and I found it very difficult to create kind of requests and things like that. So in terms of if I ever wanted to do kind of Objective-C stuff, I don't ever see me going back and trying that, just because it's a different way of thinking. You need to know the CocoaTouch framework, which is kind of the underlying, as you say, there's kind of table views and things like this, but you only ever look at the Apple documentation. You don't ever need to go back to Objective-C and go, oh, how does this work? I'm going to do it in Objective-C. It's pretty seamless in terms of looking at kind of Objective-C code and translating it over to C#, really.
Because the reason I ask is that I'm trying to get my head around if this is a clever hack, and, you know, an interesting bit of spackle on top of something, because apparently thousands of developers are able to figure out the obscurities of Objective-C, which I find visually just very difficult. I cannot get my brain cells to fire around Objective-C. Is this a crutch that has been created, or is this really something interesting? I mean, maybe if you just pushed another week, it'd be more powerful and you could do more with Objective-C. That's kind of what I'm trying to reconcile.
Yeah, I mean, you're only really kind of limited by what's not bound to monotouch from Objective-C. So what monotouch does for the most case, if you're not using .NET kind of classes such as web client, for instance, if you're just using kind of the CocoaTouch framework, so you got a UI view controller, for example, all that's doing is calling Objective-C behind the scenes. So you're only limited in terms of what monotouch is bound. And if they haven't bound it, you can always go and bind it yourself. So you're only limited in a way where you have to maybe write more code. I think the clear advantage of using monotouch as a .NET developer is code reuse, really. So what I can do is I can create a separate project where I kind of have all proxies and have separate code in terms of going off to get data and receiving data. And then I'll be able to either take that and put it on another app and have it run pretty much the same because it's just .NET code. Or, for instance, if you wanted to use Flickr library, there's flickr.net, which is an open source library. And I think there's about 8 lines that you need to change to get it to work with monotouch. So I can reuse that .NET library within my monotouch app. That's pretty powerful.
Ah, now, can you give me an idea what kind of those, I mean, without remembering those exact 8 lines, what kind of stuff would I want to change? I mean, is that just one example where you got lucky and a really well-written open source app ported over nicely? Or is it that complete that you can really go and say, you know, yeah, Flickr.net, move the Facebook SDK and get a little Twitter action, and you really can use proper desktop libraries on this phone?
I think you're kind of limited in terms of, I think it works much nicer in thinking about if this will run on kind of a Silverlight .NET runtime. I think that's probably the best way of thinking about it. Because apart from using kind of reflection.emit, which you're not allowed to do, you're kind of only limited in terms of what Mono exposes as a framework, really. So whatever will work in Mono will pretty much likely work with monotouch, but it depends on whether it does use sort of things like reflection.emit.
Hi, this is Scott Hanselman from another parallel universe. Got to tell you about some of our things our sponsors are doing. They make this free podcast possible. If you're developing a new line of business application, you've probably tried the latest version of Silverlight. Now you can get even better results by combining the functionality in Silverlight 4 beta with some of the richness of the third-party controls from our friends at Telerik. They're the first vendors to offer native support for the Silverlight 4 beta and their RAD controls. They've got a new Silverlight 4 CTP suite of these controls. They let you tap into the framework's great potential. You got native right mouse click and all the new features of Silverlight. There's 38 controls that give you all these features. You can start building those compelling line of business applications right away. I encourage you to check those products out at Telerik.com/Silverlight. And, thank Telerik for supporting .NET Rocks, supporting Hansel Minutes on their Facebook fan page at Facebook.com/Telerik. Now back to the show. So a couple of months ago, I think it was in November, I was on Twitter, and which is like a typical Tuesday for me. And someone had contacted me. I don't know who it was. It was some slimy marketing person who said, "Hey, we can make a Hansel Minutes podcast, iTouch application or iPod application for $1.99. So basically, I would agree to do this. I'd give them the graphics. They would say poof. And I don't know, some monkeys would start slapping a keyboard. They had basically a podcast application construction set of some kind. They would take, 50% of the profits. And, what is it? Apple takes how much? 30%?
20%, maybe 30%.
20-30%, something like that.
Enough.
So, let's say we sell it for $2 and then Apple takes, 30-40 cents and then, the remaining $1.60 gets split up, so I get 80 cents. Again, the show is not by any means a big profit center at all. Nope. We pay for the bandwidth. We pay for the producer and the editors. And without Telerik, we would be in a pickle. So it wasn't like we were going to get rich with this app. But I threw that out on Twitter, and lots of people were like, "Oh, that's slimy. Don't do that. You're a sellout. It should be free." And other people were like, "Oh, it's built in. Podcasting features are built into the iPhone." But most interesting was a tweet from you. And you said, "I'd rather it was for free, and we built it with Monotouch." And failing me doing it, you said you'd do it. So, of course, you put yourself out there, and I said, "Let's do it." And you did. You, in fact, built a Hansel Minutes iPhone app in Monotouch, and you went and put it up on CodePlex.
Yep.
Looks like it's a version 0.01. So it's very early. But walk me through what you built, why it's different, and how hard it is, and where we could potentially take this this application. And also, I want to understand, would the user ever know that Mono and C Sharp were being used to do this?
Okay. So kind of where I started with it was, I thought, I better start building the iPhone app from start and what kind of features that we'd need. And I thought that, by default, what we would need is kind of, you can play a podcast, So I went with that, and I think we discussed ideas of what we could do in the podcast. And those ideas of kind of, you start playing the podcast, then you could, when you close the app, it would carry on running. But unfortunately, because of some iPhone restrictions, that wasn't possible. So what I wanted to do is simply get a RSS feed of your podcasts, stream them over the iPhone, and then we would build on that from kind of an early release and kind of get it out there so people can have a look at it. And then it kind of hit a wall, really. So streaming on the iPhone is actually quite difficult. You have to use audio queue services and audio buffering services, and that's just something I didn't really want to get into. So as a kind of hack, I used the web client class, and this is kind of .NET in ARM code running. And what I was able to do is download the data, download a file, which is the MP3 file. And as soon as it's downloaded enough of the app, it would just simply start playing the file. And that's kind of, it was pretty good. And the good thing about playing it straight from the file is you're not going to be constantly calling to the internet and basically killing the battery on the iPhone. And I thought, well, if we're going to be putting the files onto the device, we might as well have them so people can play them offline. So there's a bit of code in there which basically says, you know, am I connected to the internet? Yes or no. And if you are, what it'll do is it'll first save the XML file of your RSS feed, which is a list of all the podcasts. And then if you're offline, it will just show that and it'll have a little tick next to it whether you're online or you're offline, and whether you've downloaded the app, the podcast previously. And then there's a little bit of work in terms of getting a slider to work and playing an audio on the device, but it was pretty straightforward after looking at kind of the Apple documentation. And kind of one of the things that I kind of fell short of was trying to find a way of playing the audio and having it so I could, stream it wasn't going to be an option. So I think playing it from the device was a much better idea. This managed to cause problems in terms of I was trying to get it working so much where you could just play it and you can pause it. It doesn't even show you kind of what podcast you're listening to. So there's plenty of room for improvement on that side.
This code is up at hanselminutesiphone.codeplex.com, and we'll put this on the show notes. But I'm looking through some of the code here. We've got the home view controller because it looks like you've got two zip files. There's home view controller zip. This again, yep. Zip is that interface builder. And then yep. There's main window. What are the differences yep. between those two windows?
So the main window zip file is kind of like your default. When the iPhone loads up your app, what it will do is it'll place all the views that you're ever going to see onto a window. So that's kind of like a base holder. So to get it to show the home view controller, you basically you create a new version of your view controller, and then you add it as a sub view. So that's how that works.
So are you saying that one of these gets shown immediately upon launch, and the other one is the one that you sit at? I mean, which one? Is main window the one that we look at most of the time, or is home view controller the one we look at most of the time?
You look at home view controller, which is actually on the main window. You just add it as a sub view. So you only actually see the home view controller. What's in main window is a white background, which is just expecting views to be loaded on top of it.
I see. Everything hangs off of it.
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. So I'm looking at this code, and I we're talking about code on an audio podcast, so there's I recognize that there's a little irony there, but it's just, you know, public partial class, home view controller. Derives from UI view controller. It looks like perfectly reasonable code. And the things that I'm immediately struck by, which I think is probably a testament to the cleverness of the Monotouch guys, and I'm interested in your thoughts, are I see where you've got the you download our complete MP3 feed, and you say environment.getFolderPath, specialFolder.personal. That's what you do on Windows to get the My Documents folder.
Yeah, and you're limited on the device in terms of where you can put files once you've, when you can put files anywhere, you're limited. You're in the sandbox. So that allows you to put files somewhere, but not kind of anywhere on the device.
I think that's a very clever way for them to do that. I mean, why make a new method when one that a C# programmer will already understand is available?
Yeah, exactly.
And then you've got a few things like start audio session, where you're basically letting the system know that you're an application that's going to play back. And you've got start internet activity, which is a little helper function of your own. And this is interesting because on an iPhone, when you're talking to the internet, there's that little spinner, little kind of Ajaxy spinner. And here you're calling UI application dot shared application. Network activity indicator visible. So UI application dot shared application sounds like a Monotouch construct that's on top of some shared resource that iPhones have available to it.
So what it does is UI applications kind of data that your application has available to it. So It's so what you can do with shared application is it's really talking to the main iPhone. So you have network activity indicator visible, so that creates that little icon where it's going, I'm connected to the internet. But you also have stuff kind of like I think it's like badge number or something like that, application icon badge number. So that's a way where you can set the badge number with a little red number on the badge.
One of the things that I thought was particularly interesting as I was reading through the source here is not only that you were using APIs that I know how to use, like web client and using basically metaphors I was familiar with, but when you were going through the feed, the XML feed, you were using what appeared to be linked to XML?
Yeah, that's correct. So it's just an easy way of kind of creating a list of podcasts really from the feed. So I don't have to think of a new way of creating a new list of podcasts really. So I can just reuse kind of that ability.
Would you even know how to do that on a regular iPhone? How to parse XML? Do they have their own way to do that kind of thing?
I tried it, and it's actually really horrible. XML parsing on the iPhone and Objective-C, it's basically event-driven, so it tells you when you reach a new node and when you finish a node, and then you have to kind of work out everything in between, and that was a pain.
Sounds like the old-style XML reader.
Yeah. It wasn't very nice, and I did do it once, and never again. So,
and you were able to use link everywhere. You even had a line here when you're just about ready to terminate the application, where you say for each file in document.where, and then you have a lambda to say contains partial.mp3. Basically, it's your let's tidy up any partially downloaded mp3 files, which I thought was kind of interesting. And you ended up just using a nice little bit of link, an extension method, and a lambda, which makes me think that there's really everything that we're familiar with as .NET programmers is available in this Monotouch.
Yeah, I think for kind of the base class library and things like that, I think you can pretty much reuse most of the stuff. I mean, you're kind of limited in terms of if you're going to be displaying data onto a view, you're going to have to use the constructs that kind of the Apple Cocoa Touch framework provides. So in terms of displaying and actually viewing data, I think if you're going to move it to another platform, you're going to have to rewrite that stuff. But in terms of building up raw objects, you've got all that code that you can reuse.
You know, it's interesting that you say that because, I'm excited about Windows Mobile Phone or Windows Phone 7, whatever it is that they're coming out with, the next version of Windows phones. Because, one, everyone wants the new exciting thing. So, whatever we're going to come out with, at least it'll be new and fun and people will get excited about it. And I was thinking to myself, wow, okay, can I write an app that'll run on both of these? But it seems like the metaphor, once you get out of the abstract, once you get out of the non-UI world, it gets pretty hairy in this application. I mean, the basics, the manipulating of data, the retrieving of data, it's all exactly like you'd write any .NET app. Go get some XML, parse through it, manage the file system. Where things start going crazy in this particular application is when you start poking around in UI table view cells and NS index paths.
Yeah.
And while it's C#, it's just really inscrutable. And that's pretty much, that's this particular UI table that you're working with. Is that what's going on there?
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah. So this is where you kind of need to start looking at kind of either Apple documentation or information that you find on the web about how UI table views and UI table view cells work. It's quite a different mindset. So as I said earlier, kind of if you use web forms and go with MVC, it's kind of like that. You can understand, you can read C#, but the underlying framework is slightly different.
Are there any other applications that are in the App Store other than this iPhone application?
Yeah, there's one for my company actually called Great Fridays Christmas 2009. It's very Christmassy, as you might expect. And that was kind of very different in terms of all I was literally doing was kind of showing a video. And that involved a lot more kind of working out kind of how to build an iPhone app using Monitouch as kind of the bindings to Objective-C rather than I can reuse all my .NET skills. So I could have probably easily wrote that app in Objective-C, but it was good to play around with kind of Monitouch and kind of I could understand things easier because it was in C# and it was easier to read.
So you think that you'll do all of your iPhone development in this? You're pretty much sold on Monitouch. You think it's ready to go. It's in production. Your users will never know. You'll just feel that you're more productive. And for mobile phone development on the iPhone, this is the way to go.
Yeah. I mean, if there's something that doesn't work, you know, the team are great in terms of saying, okay, if you give us feedback and say this isn't working and show a test case, chances are it'll be fixed that day. You really can't beat the level of support that Monitouch kind of give back to the customers. And yeah, I don't see going back to Objective-C as an option really, just due to I can understand C#, and you know, if Apple started a way that they said to you, okay, we can't use any C# apps on the App Store, and there's no reason why they should say that, but in case that was the case, I mean, they're Apple, they can do what they want when it comes to the App Store. I think you've kind of got a good base in terms of you've been using C#-like stuff, and if you've been using UI View Controller, if you happen to go back to Objective-C, you go, well, I know how that works within C#. I understand it much better using C#, and you can probably go back and apply it to Objective-C if you really had to. But no, I'm sold on Monitouch.
Very cool. Well, I'm really glad. Do you think that you'll continue with the podcast application if maybe some of the listeners jump in and want to get involved?
Yeah, I mean it's over there and the source is there, so feel free to go download it. At the moment, I've been pretty busy not doing any kind of public facing stuff. So actually writing a Monitouch book for Rocks. So we're doing that with a few guys like Wally. Rory Blythe involved, Martin Bowling and Craig Dunn, who wrote a lot of blog posts in terms of getting started with Monitouch. So we've been kind of writing that book and hopefully that'll be out kind of summertime. So I'm kind of raring to get back to writing some proper apps actually and carry on working on the podcast app.
Very cool. Well, certainly don't feel pressured at all to finish our podcast app and put it in your book. I think that'd be an awesome sample. I say that selfishly only because we don't have a podcast app yet. I'd love to get that to help you get that into the App Store.
Yeah, I mean, there's still plenty to do on the app in terms of like what we like is to be able to at least carry on leaving comments and stuff. It'd be nice to have some integration with kind of either like the Channel 9 videos that you do. So there's still lots of things to improve on and kind of add features, which make it a little bit richer in terms of, you know, you can go on the iTunes store and download your podcast from there. Why do I need an app? So we're trying to make it much richer and more powerful.
Right. I think it would be fun to be able to read the comments that are on the website and have discussions on the phone that are the same discussions people are having on the web and all sorts of things like that.
Yeah. And are you thinking about the iPad as well?
I think the thing that's interesting about the iPad is the size of the screen, that someone could potentially listen to the show, run it in the background, or push it off in the corner and then browse. I think that being able to have a link pop up as a guest mentions it would be cool.
Yeah. I mean we can always integrate a web browser experience into the app for the iPad version, for example. So, and the great thing about Monitouch as well, you know, the iPad's a new thing that the SDK is still under NDA and no one really knows about what's happening with it. And 24 hours after the SDK was out, there was already Monitouch support. So that's something that if people are worried about, you know, when iPhone OS 4 comes out, Monitouch is going to be out of date. Chances are they'll probably have it bound within, you know, 24 hours, 48 hours. So that's something that you don't have to worry about as well.
That's great. Selfishly, as a .NET programmer, I think that if I can make mobile applications, whether it's on the Apple platform or the Microsoft platform, if I'm using the stuff that I already know and it allows me to get it done faster, that's what I'm excited about. So it'd be interesting to see when the Windows Phone 7 stuff comes out, who's the first person to come up with an app that runs in both places, and how much code actually gets shared. Is it 10%, or can you share 20, 30, 40% of the libraries for doing, like you said, large logic for parsing and non-UI related work?
Yeah, I'm hoping that Craig and I are going to have something around mix time about that, but we'll see. There's plenty to do.
Very cool. Well, we'll watch for that. I'll put, again, your blog and the application up on up in the show notes. And thanks a lot for taking the time to chat with us today.
Anytime. It's great.
This has been another episode of Hansel Minutes, and I'll see you again next week.